Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, a man I much admire. Welcome back, Tom.
Alan, happy summer. Great to be back on your show.
Well, yeah, you know, we've had you so many times, it really ought to be called the Tom DiNapoli Show.
No. I would never presume to... Look, the branding, you know, Capital Connection, Chartok, I mean, that's the branding. That's I wouldn't listen to it if it was named after me, believe me.
Okay, well, your relatives would. So anyway, let's talk about the potential changes in federal policy, which pose some real risks for the New York City budget. And there's a whole question of prudently increasing reserves to record levels, in New York. What do you make of all that?
Well, the greatest risk for the city and for the state is what's happening in Washington. All the uncertainty, which I guess if uncertainty means they can't get their act together, maybe that's a good thing given how onerous some of the proposals are. You mentioned New York City, Alan, because, of course, we just had the meeting of the Financial Control Board. Many people may not realize, and you're an outgrowth of the 70s fiscal crisis, the Control Board still meets on an annual basis to review the city's finances. And, you know, New York City is well positioned. The economy has been going strong. The city has built up its reserves, as you mentioned, the general reserves. They have a reserve fund for post-employment benefits, largely health care benefits that need to be paid. It's at record levels. So the city is well positioned, but the city faces the same challenge that local governments across New York State face, which is that on the outlines of the federal budget proposal that's out there, you know, people don't realize like 9%, for instance, of the city's budget is tied to federal dollars. And depending on which cutbacks might be enacted, you're talking about potentially a big loss to the city. Outside of the city, you're talking about billions of dollars as well, about $4.7 billion in direct federal aid to local governments outside the city. So both New York City and localities all across our state, you know, they could be severely impacted by some of these budget cuts. And at this point, because we don't know what the numbers are, we really haven't been able to anticipate in budgeting as to what the cut could be. As you know, at the state level, in the state budget, there was a provision put in if the cut would be more than $850 million, the division of the budget would have to come up with a plan to absorb those cuts. It's somewhat unclear how that mechanism would work. But we could really be hit, and that's just on federal aid. That doesn't even get into health care cuts, depending on what happens with Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. Or what about the impact of changes in federal tax policy that could hit New York? So there's a lot here, Alan, that really could put us backward with the state budget, with local budgets, with New York City's budget as well.
You mentioned something that, my foggy brain wants to ask you a question to give us a little bit of a history lesson about the Fiscal Control Board for New York. How did that come about? Why do we still have it? And who controls it?
Well, you know, everybody who knows New York history knows that, you know, New York was on the verge of bankruptcy back in the mid-70s, and it required a very significant intervention by the state, really, to come in. Many heroes from that era, Governor Carey, Richard Ravitch, who could tell the best stories to this day about that time, business leaders like Felix Rowatin, and there was a need to create bonds to help the city, the famous MAC bonds, you know, that people might recall. Mm-hmm. And there was an oversight board put up to obviously manage the debt piece to help the city to avoid bankruptcy. Remember in the famous, you know, front page of the Daily News, you know, Ford to City dropped dead. You know, that was one of the highlights, the people's memory of that era. But the long and the short is the city was able to turn around its finances with help from the state, with this oversight board that not only managed, you know, paying off those bonds, but provided a level of fiscal discipline. So who's on the board? So both controllers for the city and for the state, the governor. There are three what are called public members who aren't elected officials. The mayor participates in those meetings, and there are observers from the Senate and the Assembly as well. So it's really a joint board made up of city and state officials. There is no hard oversight of the city right now, but the board still exists statutorily. It meets once a year, and I think it provides an important function because the mayor comes, presents his update on the city's financial plan, prospects for the future. The real requirement, if I could call that, is for the city controller, Scott Stringer at this point, and myself, a state controller, to certify to the board that the city has met the conditions of what's required in their fiscal management, and that they have unfettered access to the credit markets, because that really becomes a jumping off point. If they can't borrow for their operations, then they got trouble. So we as controllers certify that there is no question of market access. That would trigger the board going back into a hard oversight. But that condition obviously hasn't lasted for many, many years.
Well, we know that the stock market is at the very top right now. Is there a danger here that what is a bull market could turn into a bear market and therefore put a real screeching halt to some of our plans?
It's such an important question, Alan, and one to which obviously we don't have a precise answer. This rally, this strong market, has gone on longer than virtually any rally in history. It's certainly been the largest in terms of the move of dollars and value on the stock market. How long that's going to last has probably lasted longer than many of the experts have felt, but no one has a crystal ball. When it may go in the other direction, we don't know, and how far will it go? With all the changes and more financial regulation, which of course some folks are trying to gut, Dodd-Frank and so on, I certainly hope they don't get away with that, but one would expect and certainly hope that we would not have the kind of meltdown we had back in 08 and 09, but it would not be unreasonable to assume that it's some point there'll be a correction, that these valuations can't stay this high. What will be the impact as interest rates go up? What will be the impact on the U.S. markets? As Europe seems to be showing some resurgence now, if the Chinese economy stables. One reason why the stock market has stayed so strong is that it's been this kind of the safest place to put money if you want to make money. You can't make money leaving it in a bank account today, and some of the other kinds of investments, commodities and otherwise, have been problematic. But that dynamic won't last forever because there are cycles, and that's one of the cautions that we put out, that this cycle, which is certainly helping the city, certainly helping the state, it can't go on forever, and that's why building up reserves becomes important. One of the criticisms we've had about the state budget this year, they did not build up the reserve. Certainly the city's done a more aggressive job in doing that. There weren't more deposits to the reserve accounts for the rainy day funds that we'd like to see. So, it is a time where we're benefiting from what's going on right now, but how long it's going to last, nobody knows.
So you have to make decisions. Obviously, you're the controller of the state. You're the sole person who makes decisions about where all those billions of dollars go. How do you cover your bets in case something bad does happen?
Well, it's a good question. Obviously, you're talking about being the trustee for the pension fund. The other billions, the legislature and the governor decide where it goes. We just follow up and we make sure they're spending the money the way they intend. But with the pension fund, it's absolutely a key question, Alan, for us, because we have a long-term goal of 7%. That goal has become more conservative over the years. It used to be 8, it was 7.5. We're now down to 7. Other pension funds are starting to move in the direction of 7, although most pension funds have a long-term rate higher than that. Our strength has always been diversification. We can't just put our money anywhere. We do have certain legal limits on where we could put money. The safest place for us to keep money is in fixed income, treasuries. The problem there is that you're not making any money, given the low interest rate environment. So
how about Apple?
Well, we have a significant holding in Apple. So actually, you back into to my next point. The place that we can put the largest amount of money that to work for us is in the public equities. So that's the biggest part of our portfolio, largely domestic public equities, some international. And then as part of diversifying, and we have limits on what we could do here, but we do have some money in real estate, in hedge funds, very little. We're not we've been diminishing or reducing our exposure to hedge funds for many reasons. Private equity, real estate, real assets. We're looking at some opportunities like in infrastructure and agricultural lands, and some debt opportunities that we would label in what we call our opportunistic bucket. So most of the money is in public equities, domestic and overseas. A big chunk continues to be in the safest investments, fixed income, and then we have various tranches of money in those alternatives I mentioned earlier. We had a return of about 11.5% at the end of the fiscal year. I'm very, very pleased
Pretty
by
good.
That. Yeah, and the first quarter, we're just crunching the numbers now. The numbers will be out, I guess, probably next week. But we're going to show another gain. So at the end of the fiscal year, we were at about $192 billion. We're going to be a few billion more than that. So we continue to be the third largest public pension fund in the nation. And, Alan, the most important number is what the Pew Research Center put out a bit ago. Pew, very famous research center. They look at how much money do you have, what's the size of your fund, but what kind of liabilities do you have? Because the main question is, how do you cover your liabilities? We came in as the number 3 out of 50 states, best-funded pension plan in the country, 98% funded. That's an enviable position to be in. It means we can keep our promise to our public workers and retirees. And that helps everybody.
Why are you number 3? Why shouldn't you be number 1?
Well, we want to be number 1. So I always say we're in the top tier, but you know, I'll take number 3. We were beat by South Dakota and Wisconsin, so we got to do a trip to South Dakota, see what they're doing there.
Yeah. Well, I wrote a book about the Wisconsin government there. You could certainly talk to me about that. So many years ago, of course. So my next question is that you made an announcement that New York State tax collections were lagging last year by $1.2 billion. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, although in the context of a $150 billion-plus budget, it may not be as big when you put it in that context. But you're absolutely right to point out, we put out a monthly, what we call a cash report, and it really is a way to monitor how's the money coming to the state, versus what we expected, and measuring our revenue and our expenditures. And we've seen this trend really since the beginning of the fiscal year, which started April 1st, is that the tax collections are lagging behind last year. They're lagging behind projections. Now, keep in mind, when we see that the money's coming in less than anticipated, the Division of Budget updates the financial plan, and they often reduce those projections. So you're right, we're off $1.2 billion from a year ago. In terms of the projections about where we should be at right now, we're down by about $315 million. So they've anticipated now some of that shortfall. What seems to be happening, Alan, is personal income tax collections are down. That's really where we're taking the hit. Actually, some of the business tax collections have come in higher than anticipated, covering some of that loss. Is that a sign the economy is slowing? Or another strong possibility, particularly for higher income New Yorkers who may be anticipating some of the federal tax reform that Trump has been talking about, which would tend to benefit those at the higher end, they may be holding off on some of their financial transactions. If they think, for instance, there's going to be a break in capital gains taxes, they may be holding off, cashing in some of their securities at this point. So it's too early to tell after one quarter whether that's an indication of a pattern that will continue through the rest of the year. But certainly, whenever you're coming in lower than the year before and lower than your current projections, that should be an opportunity for a yellow cautionary sign to go up.
Okay, now listen, Tom DiNapoli, we only got about 10 minutes more, so you got to keep your answers short. they're a little long right now, so I want to make sure you keep them short because I got a lot of things to cover here. As you know, the governor and the legislature did something really stupid. They gave you a pre-audit powers a bit of a whack years ago. Many of us have been calling newspapers and editorials for them to give you back the powers that you had, because it is certainly possible that if you had had those powers, some of the governor's pals might not be on trial right now. So I'm wondering, is that going anywhere?
Well, I felt we made a lot of progress during the session. There was a bill to restore and really enhance oversight, particularly on the procurements, many of which involve, you know, the billions of dollars relating to economic development, where we've seen problems. At a minimum, we should have the oversight that was taken away. We should not be using nonprofits to funnel money through SUNY the way it's been happening. It becomes very opaque. It's not a transparent or accountable process. We had the proposal introduced by Senator DeFrancisco in the Senate, Assemblymember Crystal Peoples-Stokes in the Assembly. A lot of members wanted to see it happen. You saw end of session. A lot of things, as often happens, fall off the table. Unfortunately, this clean contracting reform, despite the support of certainly the editorials and the good government groups, it didn't happen.
And me.
We're going to come back, push it again next year.
Okay, you should, because that was disgraceful. We got the summer of hell in New York City, the subways, you know, people sweating, things breaking down. How much would it cost to fix the subways and the infrastructure around the state?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, it's obviously a multi-billions if you aggregated all of that. I mean, we just, putting aside the subways, we estimated local governments were going to be short over the next 20 years, like $250 billion in a report a few years ago. You know, the challenge is a very, very clear one. When you're talking about the, you know, downstate with the subways, but I think even with other infrastructure, we've tended to emphasize some of the big ticket items, right? The Tappan Zee Bridge replacement, opening up the Second Avenue subway, or at least as much of it was done, the East Side Access Project. But what's fallen by the wayside has been the kind of more routine maintenance, track work, some of the stuff you may not see, but is essential to, you know, maintaining the signals and the switches. And obviously for New York City's, for the mass transit there, Long Island Railroad, Metro North, and the subways, that's where you're seeing some of these problems come to bear, not to mention the Amtrak issue, you know, which complicates things as well. Yeah. Look, there are plans. You have someone in charge of the MTA now, Joe Loda, who's got a good experience providing leadership there. He's come up with a preliminary plan, and he'll come up with a more thorough plan. But the challenge is we've already got a capital plan on the books that it hasn't been fully identified how we're going to pay for it. We don't know whether or not the new administration is going to come through with infrastructure money as they had once talked about, although it sounds like they were talking about leveraging private money rather than money coming directly to the states from Washington. So this infrastructure issue is going to be with us a long time, Alan. A very important issue for our economy and quality of life.
Okay, I want to ask you something. There's this thing called the IDC, the Independent Democratic Conference, and the question is, you know, these are guys who've sold their souls for a couple of pieces of silver over on the Republican side. They made common cause. Should be a Democratic Senate, isn't. So I'm going to ask you, Senator Gillibrand said that's disgraceful. What do you say?
I think the Democrats should come together. I having served in the legislature, you know, you have a caucus, you choose your leaders, and not everybody always agrees, but at the end of the day, unity is important, and I would certainly like to see that the Democrats unite. I think, as we all know from the press, there's been a lot of conversation going on, I've not been privy to the discussions, but I think there's been a real effort on the part of many to bring everybody together. Because really, you've got mainstream Democrats, Andrew Stewart Cousins groups, you got the IDC, and then you have Sipke Felder. He's like his own caucus of one. So I think it'd be wonderful if everyone who's registered as a Democrat, elected as a Democrat, comes together in one caucus. That should be the outcome. And, you know, I feel Andrew Stewart Cousins has been an incredibly effective leader for the Democrats, and I would certainly expect that she would continue to play a key role moving forward. But it has to start with unity. The stakes are too high with what's happening in Washington, and we'll make so much more progress in New York if we're unified as Democrats.
Okay, I want to ask you a question. Governor Cuomo's polls are sinking like, you know, like a rock. And there have been some people, like me, who have been saying maybe Tom DiNapoli ought to run for governor in a primary against Cuomo. Are you going to do that?
I am very focused, as I've mentioned to you many times on your show, Alan, on keeping the best job in state government, a state controller, and those are my plans.
But there must be people whispering in your ears. Come on, Tom, you can beat him. You can take him. He's unpopular upstate. He's all the rest.
One of the benefits of significant wax buildup in one's ears is that you don't tend to hear that stuff.
I get it. Okay, so the next question is, you have been collecting for a while money for various things, and then it turns out that people who are entitled to get some of that money back don't know that you have it there. And every year we see a list of things you put out saying, hey, come get your money. We got your money. How come people don't get it?
Well, unclaimed funds, I think, is what you're referring to, which it's the most fun part of the job when you give people back their lost money. Alan, we're returning now $1.5 million a day. Last year, we returned over $450 million to New Yorkers. But we still have money that ends up in our safekeeping. These are old bank accounts or checks that weren't cash that were made out to you, or maybe somebody left you money in a life insurance policy. Typically, what happens is people move and their contact information, their address or phone number somehow didn't get updated. And after a period of time, the financial institution has to turn this account over to the controller's office for safekeeping. We have like over $14 billion worth of this lost money.
It goes
decades. Yeah,
no,
you always got to look. So to your listeners, they should. We make it simple now. All they have to do is go on the website, whatever the search engine is, put a New York State controller, hit on unclaimed funds. You can actually search online, and for most of the recoveries, you can apply online, get the check back in a couple of days. Most of the recoveries are $50 to $100, but every now and then it's a few hundred. It could be a few thousand. We had an account a few years ago, all stock accounts, valued at $4 million that someone was able to claim. Yep. And we got an account at $1.7 million that hasn't been claimed.
The producer of this program, David Gustina, got some money back.
I don't think it was the $4 million, but I'm sure he got it.
It was $23. $23.
$23. That's lunch. But for some people, especially
not
in this
anymore.
Economy,
yeah.
You know, $50 or $100 can make a difference. Pay a bill, give you a night out that you didn't have before. So we want to return this money because we just keep getting more money in from these new accounts that are dormant, but we want to return the money that's there.
Okay. And I just want one more thing, and that is a very serious story, and that is that we only have about 2 minutes, but the public drinking water, which needs more protection in the state, obviously, you've been concerned about that.
Yeah, we put out some reports that have really spoken to the need for greater oversight in terms of regulations that should come from the state. The good news is there's some progress made on that front in the session this year, including a new authorization for a $2.5 billion program over a number of years to help localities improve and protect their water infrastructure. It really is just a down payment of what's needed. Like, we're an older state with all of our infrastructure, not just roads and bridges and highways, but water and sewer systems as well are aging. Certainly Hoosick Falls is a prime example. City of Newburgh has had issues as well. Where I live on Long Island, drinking water quality has been a major concern for a long period of time. But we have to make sure we have the systems in place. It's going to require more capital investment. So I give the governor and legislature credit for coming up with a good initiative there, but we're going to have to do more to build on it. If you don't have safe drinking water, access to quality drinking water, boy, that not only affects your quality of life and your health, it really makes New York a tough state to be competitive economically. So it's in everyone's interest to keep this a priority issue.
Now I got 1 minute. I don't think you're capable of giving an answer in less than a minute, but I did want to ask you this. When you put out some of these reports and the governor doesn't like them, he gets testy, doesn't he?
Sometimes, with our audits especially. But, our job is to be the independent voice and to give people the chance to know how their money's being spent. And we give the entity we audit the opportunity to express their opinion. But, we call it as we see it. We want to make sure taxpayers' money's not being wasted. That's our job, and we're going to keep doing it.
I should hope so. We're out of time. Our guest has been New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Comptroller DiNapoli, thanks so much for joining us. It's always fun when you're here. And if I seem a little bit, testy, it's only because that's who I am. I appreciate your being with us.
Thank you, Alan.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.